Chapter 23. Milk fever is one of the straightforward conditions. But looking down into the beck in the dreary dawn light, I realized that this was one of its more bizarre manifestations. The illness had struck immediately after calving, and the cow had slithered down the muddy bank into the water. She was unconscious when I arrived, her hindquarters completely submerged, the head resting on a shelf of rock. Her calf, sodden and pathetic in the driving rain, trembled by her side. Dan Cooper's eyes were anxious as we made our way down.
"I doubt we're too late.
She's dead, isn't she? I can't see her breathing."
"Pretty far gone, I'm afraid," I replied, "but I think there's still life there. If I can get some calcium into her veins, she might still come round."
"Damn, I hope so," Dan grunted. "She's one of my best milkers. It always happens to the good ones."
"It does with milk fever anyway. Here, hold these bottles for me." I pulled out the syringe box and selected a wide bored needle. My fingers, numb with the special kind of cold you felt in the early morning, with your circulation sluggish and your stomach empty, could hardly hold it. The water was deeper than I thought, and it was over my Wellington tops at the first stride. Gasping, I bent down and dug my thumb into the jugular furrow at the base of the neck. The vein came up, and as I pushed the needle in, the blood ran warm and dark over my hand. I fumbled the flutter valve from my pocket, pushed the bottle into the cup end, and inserted the other end into the needle. The calcium began to flow into the vein. Standing there in the icy beck, holding the bottle aloft with bloody fingers and feeling the rain working its way inside my collar, I tried to keep out the black thoughts. About all those people I knew who were still in bed and would only leave it when their alarm clocks rang. And they would read their papers over breakfast and drive out to their cozy banks or insurance offices. Maybe I should have been a doctor. They treated their patients in nice warm bedrooms. I pulled the needle from the vein and threw the empty bottle onto the bank. There was no response to the injection. I took the other bottle and began to run more calcium under the skin. Might as well go through the motions, futile though it seemed now. It was when I was rubbing away the subcutaneous injection that I noticed the eyelids quiver. A quick ripple of relief and excitement went through me. I looked up at the farmer and laughed.
"She's still with us, Dan."
I flicked her ear and her eyes opened wide.
"We'll wait a few minutes and then try to roll her onto her chest."
Within a quarter of an hour, she was beginning to toss her head about, and I knew it was time. I caught hold of her horns and pulled while Dan and his tall son pushed at her shoulder. We made slow progress, but after several concerted heaves, the cow took over herself and settled on her chest. Immediately, everything looked rosier. When a cow is lying on her side, she always has the look of death on her. I was pretty sure then that she would recover, but I couldn't go away and leave her lying in the beck. Milk fever cows can stay down for days on end, but I had the feeling that this one would be up soon. I decided to stick it out a bit longer. She didn't seem to relish her situation in the peaty water, and began to make determined efforts to rise. But it was another half hour, and my teeth were chattering uncontrollably before she finally staggered to her feet.
"Well, that's a licker," Dan said.
"I never thought she'd stand up again.
Must be good stuff you give her."
"It's a bit quicker than the old bicycle pump," I laughed.
The spectacular effects of intravenous calcium were still enough of a novelty to intrigue me. For generations, cows with milk fever had just died. Then inflation of the udder had saved many. But the calcium was the thing. When they got up within an hour like this one, I always felt like a successful conjurer. We guided the cow up the bank, and at the top, the full force of the wind and rain struck us. The house was only 100 yards away, and we battled towards it, Dan and his son leading, holding the calf in a sack slung between them. The tiny animal swung to and fro, screwing up its eyes against the hard world it had entered, and close behind followed the anxious mother, still rocky on her legs, but doing her best to poke her muzzle into the sack. I squelched along in the rear. We left the cow knee-deep in straw in a warm shed, licking her calf vigorously. In the porch of the house, the others dutifully pulled off their Wellingtons. I did the same, pouring about a pint of beck water from each boot. Mrs. Cooper had the reputation of being a firebrand, who exercised an iron rule over Dan and her family. But from my previous contacts with her, I had the feeling that Dan didn't do so badly. I thought so again as I saw her. Square-built but comely, plaiting a little girl's pigtails in readiness for school. A crackling fire was mirrored in the gleaming brass of the hearth, and above the clean farmhouse smell there was a hint of home-cured bacon just beginning to fry. Mrs. Cooper sent Dan and the boy scurrying upstairs to change their socks. Then she turned a calm gaze on me as I dripped on her linoleum. She shook her head as though I were a naughty child. "All right, off with your socks," she rapped out. "And your coat, and roll up your trousers, and sit down here and dry your hair with this." A clean towel landed on my lap, and Mrs. Cooper bent over me. "Don't you ever think of wearing a hat?"
"Not keen on them, I'm afraid," I mumbled,
and she shook her head once again. She poured hot water from a kettle into a large bowl and added mustard from a pound tin. "Here, stick your feet in this." I had obeyed all her commands with alacrity, and I gave an involuntary yelp as I made contact with the bubbling mixture. At this, she shot a fierce glance at me, and I took care to keep my feet in the bowl. I was sitting, teeth clenched, enveloped in the steam when she pushed a pint pot of tea into my hand. It was old-fashioned treatment, but effective. By the time I was halfway down the pint pot, I felt as though I was being consumed by fire. The riverbed chill was a dream which vanished completely as Mrs. Cooper topped up my bowl with another scalding quart from the kettle. Next, she grabbed chair and bowl and swiveled me round till I was sitting at the table, still with my feet in the water. Dan and the children were already at their breakfast, and in front of me was a plate with two eggs, a rough-cut piece of bacon, and several sausages. I had learnt enough of Dale's ways to keep quiet at meals.